You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
I'm your host, Dr. Kristen Lyerly, and we have a really meaningful show for you today. Just made more meaningful when I asked Amanda if she'd be interested in chattering with us this morning. Amanda, our amazing producer, say hello.
Hello.
Hey, we're going to talk about our unhoused population here in Green Bay. And when I asked you if you wanted to have this conversation, you said, yeah, I've been homeless.
Yeah, when I was a kid, actually, we were homeless for about 4.5 months. We bounced around from different people who like let us stay with them. We lived in this really interesting hotel, sketchy for a bit, that eventually had people running up and down it, banging on doors, screaming for money. So we
How old were you?
How old was I? I was about 10, 11.
Wow.
Yeah. And then the police came, kicked everybody out because apparently we were squatting. Didn't know that. And eventually my mom found a house in a different town, but it was a lot of bouncing around.
That is not what I was expecting to start this episode with today. Amazing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
How did your family survive that?
So my childhood is very much the definition of dysfunctional.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't think it was odd. I thought it was normal. Mm-hmm. We were completely like alienated from what normal actually was. So we got to an age when my mom had her accident, and it was that sudden realization of, oh, none of this is normal. This isn't what families do. So at the time, like, we were just fine. We're like, okay, we're going to be here now. Oh, we're going to be here now. Okay, this is completely normal. I went to school every day because that's where I got fed.
Mm-hmm.
So
that was where you got fed.
Mm-hmm.
But you're a kid, and kids are resilient.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like, all three of us, we were just going with it.
Wow. Well, here I thought we were going to start by talking about how I was in big cities and I saw homeless folks, but we still have homeless folks here in Green Bay.
I was in Fond du Lac when that happened.
You were homeless in Fond du Lac.
In Fond du Lac.
Because our homeless population is everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you see these folks on the street and sometimes you don't see them because they're everywhere trying to survive.
They're bouncing around. I know in the Manitowoc area, a lot of the unhoused hang out at the library, which, I mean, I see no problem with that. It's a nice, cool place to cool off or warm up in the winter, read some books. They have internet access.
Yeah, I think we see that here as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Safe public places to be.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, we are going to continue this conversation with two incredible guests. I have joining me here today from the city of Green Bay, Pete Silski and Jeremy Pingle. They are homeless outreach case coordinators here for the city, and they're here to share their personal experiences, but also to help us understand what's going on in Green Bay and to share some of the incredible work that they're doing to help our unhoused population. So, Jeremy, Pete, welcome.
Yeah, thank you for having us. We really appreciate the invite.
Good morning.
Good morning. So, first, let's start by just defining, what does the unhoused population look like in Green Bay? I mean, are we talking about 10 people, 100 people, 1,000 people?
Well, twice a year, they do a count. It's called a point in time count. And they did one in January, and the next one's coming up in July, the end of July. In January, they counted upwards of almost 700, between 650, 700 people were deemed homeless in Green Bay proper.
700 people in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Where are they?
Those could be people that are either living in a sheltered situation, like St. John's New Community, or living unsheltered in our parks, under our bridges, at Safe Ride. We have a Safe Ride program here in Green Bay. where a number of individuals are able to park their car safely there for a night, maybe given a blanket, some chargeable batteries to recharge their devices, some food, maybe a gas card to try to get through to the next day.
Mm-hmm. So safe ride. They're living in their cars.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. It's a whole community. Yep. They tend to potentially during the day, hang out at the parks and live in their cars very often.
Who are these people?
It's a cross-section of people. I mean, the average is a 48-year-old white man, but that's just an average. I mean, we're seeing families with young children. We had a case a couple weeks ago of Pete came across the family living in their car, young father, young mother, and then one infant and a toddler, I believe.
2 years old and 4 years old.
Yeah. So we go all the way to that. To the other extreme that we're really starting to see a lot is our elderly population that's got some disability issues that are finding themselves on the street for one reason or another. Maybe they haven't been homeless their entire life, but some scenario pops and there they are on the street.
What kind of a scenario?
I mean, I'm working with a gentleman who worked his entire life, was an engineer, actually, did not participate in his company's retirement program, and was living on a pretty decent Social Security. He ended up, his wife had died 30 years prior. He's single. He's alone. Went into the hospital with pneumonia, had blood clots, had infections. He ended up being in hospital or rehab for over a year in that time.
A year.
Yeah. Yep. Wow. And in that time, his apartment was taken away. There was no lease re-signed, and he lost his vehicle and everything in his apartment. So the word was he was released from the hospital to the steps of the shelter. And
they just dropped him off there.
Yeah. He had nothing. He had nothing. They had even misplaced his identifying documents, his ID, his Social Security, all that stuff. Card was gone. So, and you know, what is he going to do? He's never been homeless. He worked his whole life. So he doesn't even know the first step of how to get out of that situation on top of being in a frail health condition and extremely vulnerable. So, I mean, we see everything in between there.
And as a productive member of society in his youth mm-hmm. and middle age, he probably never could have imagined himself in that situation.
No, half of it is understanding the depth of where he is. I mean, that's when I came across him in about a week after I started. I'm relatively newer to this position than Pete is. I started in April. He was the first person I came into contact with, and it was first getting him to understand the depth of his situation. Mm-hmm. There was not an easy way to get out of the situation. But yeah, it's walking that whole path with him, and every scenario is different.
So he didn't really understand that he was homeless and he mm-hmm. didn't have stuff.
Nope.
Wow.
But the positive news is next month he'll be moving into an apartment. So we were able to get all those documents and able to get him stabilized, and he's got a place to go to now.
How do you get from he's dropped off on the stoop of a building without any of the things that he had built up his entire life, including his identification, to he is about to enter a place where he is going to call home, and it's in a sustainable environment?
You know, his situation is not, they're all different, but his is kind of unique. So his is getting those documents, figuring out his health situation, getting health care figured out, and then walking the lines of, okay, what's the process to get you where you need to be? Do we have to clear any of this? Were you evicted? Because if there's an eviction on the record, we have to figure that out and get that cleaned up. What's with the car? Is there a lien or a mechanic's lien on the car that we have to figure out? What's going on with the bank? These are all situations that we really got to dig through. So it's walking that whole line with him from starting completely starting over, not in the way you think. You're starting from nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going all the way to build that social security card, that ID, some housing situations. And then what are we going to do to maintain this? It's just a whole plan for that gentleman.
I was talking with someone earlier this week about the show that we were doing, and they said with the closing of a school in their town, there was this big dorm that was available. Why couldn't we just put all the homeless people in that dorm? Pete, does it work that way? There are rooms there, so everybody just go there.
In Green Bay, we have many wonderful agencies and organizations that provide services and support to the unsheltered in our community and the less fortunate. Currently, we don't have a respite center for our elderly or disabled. We don't necessarily have a lot of our organizations in our community seem to be at a point of expansion and expanding services to help provide better services to their clients and the community. But right now, I don't see anyone just moving into an empty building and bringing people in. I mean, you have to consider policy procedure. I know that Jeremy has some background, and I do. I worked for Family Services for a while, the Billy Crest Center, and we did wonderful work there with youth and youth who were in challenging and troubled situations, and worked to help them get stabilized, provide counseling to them, and they lived on site. It takes a large staff and policy and procedure in place to be able to shelter people like that. And St. John's and New Community Shelter do a wonderful job of that. But we do need more, and we need more housing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're talking with Pete Silski and Jeremy Pingle. They are homeless outreach case coordinators for the city of Green Bay. We're talking about our unhoused population and what it takes to embrace these neighbors of ours and get them into a sustainable housed situation. I was shocked the first time we talked about this, the number of different community organizations that you work with, that you can plug into in order to help these people. And Jeremy, you spoke earlier about this fellow you met who had nothing, and you had to go through all of these different resources to try to solve all of these problems in order to clear a pathway for him to get to a house. This must have taken months.
Yeah, we, like I said, I came into contact with him in April, and we moved, it's July, so he'll be moving in there in August. So that's quick, to be honest
with
you.
That's a fast turnaround.
That's a very fast turnaround, what we're seeing. I've got another gentleman who's been on the street since 2022, and he's got potential here pretty quick to be housed, but that's how long that process takes. We're looking, 6 months, 6 to 8 months, ideally. But
6 months to a year, typically, to get pulled.
And some of the waiting lists are over a year long, depending on where you're looking. So,
what do people do in the meantime? Or is that a question that we need to answer after we come back from this break?
Yes.
All right. This is Dr. Kristen Lyerly. You're listening to the Dr. Kristen Lyerly Show. We are talking about our unhoused population with Pete and Jeremy from the city of Green Bay. So much more to come.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lyerly Show. It's me, Dr. Kristen Lyerly, joined by Jeremy and Pete. They are homeless outreach case coordinators for the city of Green Bay. And as you know, I love to feature local bands. And actually, I mean, Jeremy, you're the music guy here. We love biking.
Yeah.
And bands and our families. You also mentioned that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yep. All about that.
Does this band sound familiar to you at all?
Yeah. So, you know, it's amazing. I grew up in the Appleton, Neenah area. I went to Neenah High School. So, there's a gentleman, Walt Hamburger, that I kind of knew in high school. And then I spent a ton of time up here growing up at Concert Cafe. I don't know if you're familiar with that. It's Concert Cafe, Rock and Roll Land, or not Rock and Roll, Rock and Roll High School was the name. I saw all these amazing bands, but they were a little more punky, which is where I fell in love with stuff like this. There's a local band, Boris the Sprinkler.
That's what we're listening to right now.
That Boris the Sprinkler, that's who this is. And then there's a Walt Hamburger from Neenah. Those are guys that played there that I loved. And Boris is still doing shows. I think they've got a show coming up, or they did. I was out of town here in Green Bay. So
they do.
They're just so fun.
They do on the 25th.
Yeah. Oh, the 25th, yeah. Yeah. So totally a great band to go check out. I got to catch them a couple years ago, open up for Mudhoney. But yeah, I love music. And growing up in that area, we have kind of the Mile of Music and all that stuff down there.
Mile of Music is so great.
I just really enjoy. So yeah, my grandpa got me into it. So vinyl records are my thing. I've got probably upwards of 9,000 vinyl records in my house, CDs galore.
You weren't joking when you said you were the music guy.
I love music. And
Pete's like, yes, Jeremy is the music guy.
Bikes, you rode up on your bike, and I was jealous because it was National Bike Week. And I've got, I think, 15 in my garage. Right now, my kids and I race mountain bikes and do all that stuff. So
biking is kind of what got you into this work.
Yeah. So my childhood was interesting. I was a single mom who worked her tail off. My mom is amazing. My hero does such great, amazing things and did through her career. She worked a lot, and I spent a lot of time alone. Not a lot, but time alone. And had kind of a rough time through school. Really a rough time through school. And so that was always in the back of my mind. I got this job as a bike mechanic, and a gentleman came into the shop and said, hey, I work for this organization that works with kids that have been kicked out of school, and Appleton police, they bring our bikes to us and we fix them up or auction them off. And that's how we fund some of the programming. Mm-hmm. We'd like a technician to come in and repair them a little bit so we can get a little bit more money for them. So I did this, and as it's going, I'm like, this is awesome. These kids are really cool. And I'm only a couple years older than them. So I started kind of showing them how to do the bike thing, and it ended up working out for everybody. So some of these kids ended up getting jobs in that industry, and it kind of turned their lives around. They had kind of somebody to spend time with them, mentor, which I noticed was something that was lacking in that group. So that's when I started going to nonprofits, and 20 some years later, I've been in nonprofits at various levels. Most recently, I worked for St. Vincent de Paul and Neenah with a awesome food pantry, Vinny's Pantry. Big shout out to them. That was successful. So this opportunity came up, and I said, I've not been on this side. I've always been on the service provider. So I love the population. So I took a jump, and here I am.
Mm-hmm. You know so many of these community resources because this is the path that you've taken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Pete, you've had a little bit of a different approach to your job. Tell us how you got here.
Well, mine is one. It's my journey. Mm-hmm. I was homeless for many years. I suffered in 26 years of addiction. And I lived in multiple states, cities. I was thinking about on my drive over here, I believe the first time that I lived in a shelter situation was in the mid-90s in Flint, Michigan, mm-hmm. at a Salvation Army adult rehabilitation center. It was work therapy, very labor-intensive. And several of the elderly who were sheltered there passed away that summer.
Wow.
I watched them die as they were kind of working. I mean, I was very grateful for the shelter and the services that they provided, but these were individuals who had been ravaged been plagued by addiction for many, many years. I mean, they were well into their mid-80s, but to stay in that situation, you had to work. So after 26 years of addiction and burning almost everyone in my life that ever cared about me or had the misfortune of trusting me, it sounds like we'll talk more after the break.
No, we've got plenty of time. Keep talking. We got a couple minutes.
I found myself in Green Bay in a bit of a toxic relationship, definitely a toxic relationship with drugs and alcohol. Mm-hmm. And I was finally ready to surrender and to admit that I had a problem. I always had tried to manage my issues in the past, and I finally had to give that up, and there was no managing the chaos that could bring into my life. So I surrendered my addiction. I went into Willow Creek, received services through there, and then went through Jackie Nitschke Center, which is right here in town, started by Jackie. She was an amazing woman from what I've heard. Never had the chance to meet her. But after that, I went back into being a machinist, and I started sponsoring men through a program of recovery, and ultimately got into recovery coaching. And then I wanted to give back. I got into a point where I wanted to make amends and give back. And so I was offered an opportunity to work here locally for Manna for Life. And mm-hmm. I started out driving the truck, picking up food for the pantry.
Hey, I want to continue your story, Pete, because you have a special rapport with the people that you're working with right now. And that's really incredible. So this is Dr. Kristen Lyerly. I am here with Pete Silski. I don't know why I have a hard time thinking
like
of your
life. Like a windowsill and a ski downhill.
Pete Silski and Jeremy Fingle, they are homeless outreach care coordinators for the city of Green Bay. And we'll be back in a few minutes.
Got a monster, marathon, I'm playing in my pants. The girls I want.
Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lyerly Show. I am Dr. Kristen Lyerly rocking out with Pete Silski and Jeremy Pingle. We are talking about our unhoused population in Green Bay. They are homeless outreach case coordinators for the city of Green Bay. And if you missed any of our conversation thus far, you can always find it wherever you get your podcasts at civicmedia.us. And you can always listen into the show here on Saturdays and Sundays at 3 on WGBW and WISS. And of course, streaming on the Civic Media app. So Pete, let's pick up where you left off, because you're telling this incredible story about your lived experience, and now you're on the other side of it.
Yeah, I think I left off. I worked for Manna for Life, providing, and we had a nice sized food pantry, and we provided basic essential goods through our voucher program to the less fortunate in our community, as well as we started a job program. We collaborated with UMOS, and it is an excellent job program. They still have it now, in which people in early recovery could come in and get paid to work at the nonprofit and provide mm-hmm. services to their community. Mm-hmm. But and then I moved on and worked for Family Services. I helped manage a sober living here in town for Darjeun for about a year. And then this opportunity presented itself, and it's such a blessing. I'm very gratified to be able to be in this position. And it really has shown me, as you said, that I didn't know when I was going through the depths of addiction and facing these challenges and waking up on the side of the street and really feeling that the pain and consequences of that disease, that by getting through it to the other side, how my life experiences could be helpful to those who come after me and those I encounter. You know, when we come across problems and challenges that we faced and found a solution to, by providing that and sharing that solution, that lived experience with others, you know, it can not only help them overcome those challenges, but give them hope. And I think that's a lot of what Jeremy and I do, is just by interacting with these folks, is hope is restored, that they can be rehoused, that they can have a life of meaning and of purpose, and that they're valued.
Talk about hope, Jeremy.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the interactions these folks have had in the past have been negative. I mean, you know, and the first day that I walked on the job, I walked into St. John's Park and I didn't know what to expect, but people were like, what do you do? And I said, and all of a sudden there was like, oh, there's somebody here that's going to offer some help. Mm-hmm. And everywhere we go, I mean, most of the folks know who we are and know what we're about. And it just, you see a different mindset from even when I was here on folks and the kindness and the I just don't know what the next step is, or I don't know how to, I know what the next step is, but I don't know how to get there. And that's the kind of hope that I see and I feel. And it was a little overwhelming my first couple of weeks, that was what was needed. And it's just a great feeling to be able to offer that. I think both Pete and I feel that.
Absolutely.
You created this space where people didn't feel judged, mm-hmm. where they knew that they could go for help to ask questions instead of being shuffled along and told to move. Mm-hmm. This work isn't easy. This isn't a job where you just go in and do your job and then you come home and you're done and you watch television or whatever. There's a huge emotional impact, and it takes a lot, I would have to imagine, of your heart.
Yeah. We're seeing people at their absolute lowest of the low. I mean, this is, and I don't know the folks that want to be in the situation. I haven't met them yet. They don't want to be here, and it's the stories we hear, the things we see. Yeah. It does take a toll. It's something that my past experience and having done the things that I've done and worked with populations before, I'm able to go home and separate and spend time with family and stuff. But yeah, you've got to know when your limit is to kind of move on, to kind of take a break, to step out for a bit.
Mm-hmm. So self-care is very important. Being in recovery, I'm blessed in the ability I have to be aware of my emotions and of my feelings and understanding where I'm at. And I think, I'm sure Jeremy does that as well, mm-hmm. do that mental checklist. And there's been days where I've had a 60 plus year old individual in the car at the end of the day. It's raining out and it's already an hour past work, and I provide them a poncho or a tarp, and I'm dropping them off at a park or under a bridge, trying to get them to some canopy. But ultimately, at the end of the day, it takes a community to truly help solve these problems. Like, Pete can't solve this problem. Pete's not going to defeat homelessness. But with our community coming together and the agencies and organizations, expanding services, more housing becoming available, hopefully the impact can be lessened.
Let's talk a little bit about some of those resources. As you were listing some of them off to me, I had no idea what you were talking about because there are so many. And you know that if this person has this need, you go to this organization. And if this person has this need, you go to that organization. But a lot of these nonprofits and safety net organizations are really in peril in the current political environment. What does that mean for your work ahead?
Yeah, I mean, we look at even things that we don't necessarily rely on, but like the safe parking, this at night, that organization is struggling. It's blanking right now who oversees the safe parking, but that organization I know is doing some fundraising right now because that's in jeopardy constantly. So, but there's organizations like We All Rise and The Gathering Place and things like that aren't that well known, but they do so much good for the folks that they serve. And those are organizations that we rely on as respite, peer-to-peer support, or just a place to go if there's nowhere to go. If it's raining, what do I do? Those are organizations that we really rely on.
Absolutely, as well as, Mana for Life and the different treatment centers, Jackie Nitschke Center, Core out of Manitowoc, St. John's, obviously. Yeah. There's New Cap, House of Hope. Yeah. Our community is blessed with a lot of strong organizations that do provide support and assistance. And it's really, it's important, I feel, that, you know, our community strengthens them and supports them in their work of providing these services. So that way these individuals can have those essentials that they need to get out and into a rehousing situation. I think in our role, as well as helping them while they're homeless, one aspect of what we've been able to do with the folks that we've been able to get rehoused is provide wraparound services and do that warm handoff to other services to bring into their home and meet them where they're at there. And that really helps in the stabilization piece. Some of these individuals have been housed a time or two and it did not go well. They needed more support to really stabilize and succeed.
We all need that. We all need to know what our resources are, right? Yeah. I mean, it's not just about the place. It's about all of the stuff that surrounds us as well.
Yeah.
Especially with our elderly and disabled.
Yes.
That's been a special focus for you. Mm-hmm. And I think the time we talked like a month ago, I think at that point you had 20 people that you had been able to rehouse at that point with a special focus on the elderly and disabled. Is that right?
It's not quite that high. But we're over 10.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we're over 10. And housing is important. Yes, that's the end goal. But we view success a little differently because we have folks that are going through mental health crisis that are deep in substance use. So if we can work with someone to seek treatment, that's a huge step. If we can find someone that is willing to get stabilized stabilize their mental health situation, that's a huge step. I mean, you think about it, if somebody's has a terrible mental health diagnosis and they're medicated, living on the street is the worst place to store that medication.
Where do you even get your medication? How do you afford your medication?
Yeah, so some folks have a little bit of income. You know, they have Social Security. That's another thing we should probably talk about at some point. But they have access to Medicare, Medicaid that might help with that stuff. But the ability to keep that medication so you can continue to take it is a huge struggle because... Yeah,
especially with our diabetics.
Yeah.
And to your point, though, for individuals and connecting them with healthcare, health providers, especially the mental health piece, a lot of our job and our steps to success are that quality of life piece. Mm-hmm. And the individuals that we're encountering and working with today, I can assuredly say their quality of life has been improved because they tell me that.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Oh, I can't imagine how satisfying that is.
Yeah,
you're listening to Pete Silski and Jeremy Fingle. They are homeless outreach care coordinators for the city of Green Bay. Hey, I am just really struck by the dedication that you both have to this really troubling and growing problem. Mm-hmm. What do you think, as far as people who are listening right now, how can they help? Jeremy, earlier you said engaging with some of the community organizations that are around town. But if people are listening and they're like, I just want to do something, how can we pitch in and help?
Well, really, we focus a lot on stigma. You know, there's a huge stigma about the homeless population. And we try not to dwell in that world. We're just looking to connect with resources. So really, the best way to help is those resources. Those
supporting the local nonprofits.
Those
and
local
agencies,
nonprofits are the best way to do those little ones that do a lot of work.
Well, that have relied upon grants in the past, like you mentioned, the Gathering Place, potentially We All Rise, Jackie Nitschke Center.
A lot of those grants are going away.
They could
They're
be.
They're going to need community support to consistently offer services at the level that they are and carry on.
That's the best way to support, I think.
Yeah, as well as you mentioned the stigma. You know, these are people, and a lot of them are experiencing a worse day than some people have in their entire life if they were placed in those shoes. So potentially you might come across an unsheltered person who maybe have a negative experience or they're exhibiting some negative behaviors. What I feel like we need to do as a community is we can recognize the negative behavior, but show kindness and grace for the person and what they're going through.
show kindness and grace for the person. We can all do that right there at the point of contact that requires literally zero anything else except just being a human being.
Yeah. And if you see an unsheltered person in crisis, you can call the non-emergency line and they will connect with the homeless response team and we will come out there, someone from the homeless response team, and provide resource navigation to that individual in crisis.
And you mean the non-emergency line for the
Green Bay Police Department.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's really helpful. Mm-hmm. Okay. Guys, we have one more segment left. Okay. Yeah. And we have so much more to talk about.
I hope you got a good song for after.
I'm sure.
I mean, I really leaned hard on Jeremy, I'm sure it'll be a good sign. All right, everybody, this is Dr. Kristen Lierley. You're listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show on WGBW and WISS and streaming on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. This is Dr. Kristen Lierley once again rocking out with Pete Silski and Jeremy Pingle. They are homeless care case coordinators for the city of Green Bay. We're talking about our unhoused population. Guys, our unhoused folks, some of them actually do have income. I mean, many of them have worked their entire lives. They have Social Security. They have benefits, but it's not enough, is it?
Yeah, no, we're seeing people that have the gentleman we had before but other scenarios where someone's on a fixed income and the apartment complex they're living in or whatever gets sold and a new owner comes in and wants to raise the rent but their fixed income isn't going up. So all of a sudden they find themselves on the street as well.
Yeah, quite a few of our unsheltered are on a fixed, very fixed low income, and the availability of units, it's very tight.
And we're in Green Bay. It's not like we're living in Los Angeles. I mean, housing is affordable. I mean, in a city like Green Bay compared with a bigger city.
When we're mentioning fixed income, these are individuals who are making $700 and less a month to live on. And most studios now in Green Bay, I think, are going for
up over a thousand. Yeah, I think so.
And that doesn't include food,
anything,
healthcare,
utilities,
food. Yeah.
So
basic needs.
And a lot of our individuals. So in this role has been so important to these individuals because we're able to provide that support as well as transportation. A lot of these individuals have mobility difficulties and disabilities, and by being able to not just provide that resource navigation and realizing, okay, you need an ID, we need to get to the DMV, you need a social security card, we need to take you over here, we need to reactivate and get you back on some insurance, let's go over to the county building, being able to take them along with us for that journey and support them through that. Otherwise, I mean, I can't count how many individuals I've helped receive identifying documents, and you cannot get any sort of housing or a lot of the services without that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You don't think about all of the details that lead to getting into that house and the time and the effort.
The other side of that, an important thing I wanted to share is that these individuals who are disabled and elderly are not receiving the same level of care while they're unsheltered as they would in a home. A lot of time there's a lot of in-home care that comes to our elderly and disabled when they're in a house setting that is just unavailable to come out and meet them on the streets and be able to help them.
Mm-hmm. They've got nothing.
Yeah. Well, nothing and minimal support. You know, the case managers in our shelters they're real heroes and they're pillars, but I mean, caseloads of 50 and 60, it's hard to make significant impact.
Yeah.
And that's part of the beauty of this program is that the two of you have been able to find people and establish a rapport and determine what their needs are and to actually help them get those identifying documents, connect them with the resources that they need, and support them in with that wraparound care instead of just sticking them in a place and expecting them to be able to do well.
Absolutely. And imagine if they, some of them were rehoused and they were just placed into an empty room. Mm-hmm. That's not home. Mm-mm.
On top of that, we can go into appointments and make sure they're being cared for appropriately. Like real care. Stigma, again, can follow people into many different places. So we can go in and make sure that, I don't think that what you just said is accurate. So here's the real situation.
Advocacy.
Advocacy.
Huge.
You can speak to that,
yeah.
Jeremy.
Real quick, a gentleman went into the emergency room. He was slumped over. He was not able to stand. The ER doctor came in and told me that he just hadn't eaten. So that was the problem. And they were going to release him.
This is a man in his 70s.
I requested a social worker who came in and was not pleasant and said the doctor said no need to keep him, so they're going to release him. And he can't walk. He can't move. They walked him to the bathroom with a walker. Took 2-3 people to get him up and moving.
Wow.
So I said, no, that's not what we're going to do. He ended up, we ended up taking care of that, calling another agency who requested a safe discharge, which they could not provide. So we ended up staying. Turns out he had a massive bacterial infection.
Mm.
And he was in the hospital for 2 weeks, and he's still in a rehab center right now. So those are the kind of things that we can say.
But now, while he's been in the hospital for those 2 weeks, you were able to do the work, and he'll be exiting to his new apartment.
Yeah.
Instead of just being dropped off on somebody's porch.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
Or the shelter. And I mean, a lot of times our shelters are being asked to do so much in these cases for these individuals, and they're not necessarily set up for that.
This is a web of resources that was very intentional. Mm-hmm. That was a long time coming, acknowledging that this has been a problem here in our community, and then moving toward a solution. And a huge part of the solution is the two of you.
Well, I want to thank Will Peters in Neighborhood Development, Jennifer Allen working for Clarity, St. John's, for all the work that they did to be able to show that these positions could have an impact and could help this community.
Mm-hmm. And this is a program that's... And of course, the mayor, and our wonderful communications director who made this happen, Michael Bergman, who's sitting behind us. Fellas, I am so grateful to you for the work that you've done. It's only been a few months. This program isn't even a year old. And look at how you are changing lives and making a difference here in Green Bay. Pete Silski, I will get this. Pete Silski, Jeremy Pingle, homeless care outreach coordinators for the City of Green Bay. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us, Doctor.
This is great.
Yeah, we'll keep doing it. Yeah. All right, friends, I want to hear from you. Send me your ideas for topics, guests, music, whatever you want to hear. This is our conversation, and we can talk about whatever we want. In the meantime, you can find me at Dr. Kristen Lyerly on pretty much all of the socials. Send me a private message if you want to. And if you missed any of our conversation, you can always find me wherever you get your podcasts. See you next week, Saturday and Sunday at 3 on WGBW, WISS, and streaming on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.